The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
As an independent investigative reporter, it's possible you've read my work before. I've covered stories across the United States and the world, but this post is not a typical report. In fact, it's not a report at all. This is about me personally and something that has been happening. A little over a week ago, I started having unusual dreams, but unusual is perhaps not a good word. In my dreams, I'm living the life of a man named Bill Niven. He doesn't live in a world like ours, and in fact, I'm quite certain he lives inside a computer. At first, he was on the hunt for someone, but as things have progressed, Bill Neven's life has been thrown into disarray. It's my hope you can figure out how I'm connected. The hardest part about this will simply be relaying my nightly experience. I've thought long and hard about how to do this, and I think that perhaps the best way would be to present my dreams like a story, but not like a report. From Bill Neven's perspective, try and understand that this was my first dream. For now, I won't say much about him, but I will fill you in on four things. One, he lives in a city that is a little over 400 years old. Two, it's a digital city, and the residents are aware of this. Three, people have children, live their lives, but they never die in Bill's digital world. Four, he's a historian of our world. I hope that helps. Here was my first dream. And I know the transition might be quite jarring at first. It certainly was for me when I went to sleep. I'm 53. I've been married twice and have no children. For 30 years, I've worked and studied as a historian, trying to understand our city and how we got here. In this perfect utopia we created for ourselves, where money is meaningless and time is infinite, we've lost something. We have police volunteers, teachers, bakers, and artists, but they're all missing our history and what traditions we have when men still died. That's opaque, I know, so let me just explain clearly. Our city, our world, our livable space, it is not real. It was made by humans to be inhabited by human minds. We don't know why we chose to live in a cyber world, but we know our choice is complete. There is no way out, and no one even contemplates that. But the world we made for ourselves was a utopia of human design. So, of course, there are so many flaws that we must fix from the inside. Lately, that has been my job. I go to municipal services, and I teach about how these jobs worked in our old history, and how the procedures we have now could be improved by learning from our past. I believe my latest project will also be the most challenging. I've been asked to advise a police station located in the northeastern corridor of Welvin, the city where we all live, but will never die in. The issue the police station faces is an old-world problem with new-world complications. They have what I think used to be considered a serial killer, but their criminal can't complete the act because people don't die here. People feel pain, their bones break, their eyes can gouge, but they always heal. I've been told that our gift of immortality has not been received as a gift by his victims. In their inability to die, the killer has taken to dismember bodies over and over, searching for a satisfaction he cannot possibly fulfill. We only know this because Claire Wexler managed to escape from his capture 3 weeks ago. So far, she has been unable to speak clearly about what happened, but we know she was held for 2 decades, and was regularly attacked in a fruitless effort for her death. She also says he is currently holding additional victims in his quest for death. The designers that built this place, we know so little about their thought process. I often wonder why they implemented systems like pain. Guessing why God designed something is problematic, but when God was just some programmers trying to build their version of utopia, the logic can seem to make no sense at all. Even the founders, the first humans to awake in our city, do not know why decisions were made. My mentor, a founder himself, once told me he thought pain, like many systems, he argued, were built into our world to remind us that we're human. He said, the designer's philosophy was to make humans as happy and as content as often as possible, but never at the expense of what makes us human. We need constant reminders of how we used to live in our old physical world. I think about him, my mentor, and his guiding theory of our world as I sip coffee across the street from the police. I know soon I'll have to argue with people who have been running a station for 400 years and who only know how to run it their way. I'll have to tell them that to find their criminal, they'll need to look at how we used to catch their outdated term, a killer. At the police station, it goes as poorly as expected. The station chief, the one in charge, he tells me that they can find their criminal without help from perspectives of the old world. In his defense, doing something for 4 centuries would probably instill the feeling that you're pretty good at it. And to his credit, he didn't dismiss me entirely. He simply sidelined me.
You'll spend your time helping us at this station by first getting to know what we actually do here, he said. I'm gonna have you follow Peter. He's been doing this job for 120 years. Get some idea of what we do, and then maybe we'll listen to your suggestions from the animals of your history readings.
When I first met Peter, he didn't seem to be thrilled that I was going to be tailing him throughout the day. But on that first car ride together, he actually expressed an interest in what I study.
So, these architects, these designers, why'd they make the roads the way they did?
What do you mean? I asked.
I mean, I'm driving 20 minutes to get to a place we could be at in 5 if the road was straight. Seems really poor design. If we can make our own roads, I don't think we'd do it this way.
I give a nervous chuckle. I think you can say that about anything. Why are these apartment buildings that automatically get built when the population goes up? Why do they get placed where they do? Why aren't the apartments all the same, instead of nice ones and less nice ones? No one knows for sure why they built this place the way they did. We can only ever guess.
So maybe they just liked the idea of driving, says Peter. I guess that will explain why I'm on the road so often.
If it makes you feel any better, there's something from the old world called traffic. We don't know about it here, so people don't realize it, but we're lucky we don't have to deal with it.
Traffic. Like moving.
The opposite, actually. It's when roads would have so many cars on them that cars would just stop and couldn't move forward.
That's insane. How could you have a bunch of cars on the road and they're not going anywhere?
Yeah, I say. But after reading about it, I just wonder how they solved what seemed to be a pretty common problem back then. I have a friend in school that actually wrote a report on how they thought the designers did it, but couldn't prove anything.
What'd he say?
She, actually. But she argued the roads built additional lanes all the time based on how many cars are on them.
That doesn't sound right. I think I'd see the roads getting wider.
Yeah, that's what our mentor said, too. I don't know. It's been a while. But her report made some claim that we don't notice it because the extra lanes are hidden from view. It's very academic and not particularly provable, so...
Well, if you go back to studying, you'll have some stories to tell those people.
Oh yeah? Where are we going anyway? The station chief said to find Peter, but I didn't say anything else.
The chief will do that. Withhold information. Frankly, he's a bit ticked Council sent someone like you to our station.
It wasn't my choice, I said.
I know, Peter sighs. I don't blame you. But in the real world, our world, we got problems that history from ages ago never had to deal with, and definitely don't have any answers for. Today, we're going to be picking up Richard Matterson.
What did he do?
Not sure, really. He just hadn't shown up for council-mandated study or municipal volunteering in 3 years. We need to make sure he's still the same residence. His apartment isn't being wasted. Then, well, if people hadn't been heard from for a while, it's possible he either is or has been captured by our major criminal. The one you're supposed to help us find.
He hasn't shown up for work in 3 years, and you're just seeing him now?
Designers made it so new apartments go up all the time. Police stations, not so much. Guess they didn't really think we'd need them as much as we do.
I nod, and realize that while I may have studied how police worked in the old world, I really didn't have much idea of how they worked in our world now. We arrived at the large gray and black building, a repeated type that echoes throughout the city, and took the elevator to the 17th floor at Mr. Matterson's apartment. Peter knocked on the door several times to no answer.
Mr. Matterson, he says, you in there? No one's seen you for a while. You're not in much trouble. We just want to make sure you're okay and that someone's in this apartment. Can you please open up?
It feels like a minute passes between the door slowly moving open. Wedged between the door and the frame is a tall, skinny man. His visual aging has maxed out, so he looks around late 20s, early 30s. But inherent to our world, he could be any number of years old. Matterson is shaking and nervous. He looks distrustfully at Peter and barely even gives me a glance.
What do you want?
Matterson asked, agitated. Peter tries to peer into his apartment, but the dark lighting and flashing of static on screens probably hinders his view.
We won't know why you haven't shown up to municipal service or school in 3 years.
I'm trying to be an artist, Matterson replies.
He opens the door a little more to show paintings, instruments, and video recorders, laid about in a disorderly fashion. The look on Peter's face says he'd seen something like this before. He pushes his foot forward, opening the door more, and takes a step into Matterson's apartment.
Oh yeah? What type of artist?
Just trying to figure out what I'm good at.
3 years? What have you found?
I'm not sure. Some people like my paintings, I think.
What you do in your own time is your business, Mr. Matterson. But you know the rules. You have to show up for school or service, and you can't avoid it. We'd like to take you back to our station so we can sign you up for volunteering or school. Can you come with us?
Peter asks, as he walks further into the apartment, inspecting the unfinished projects of artistry littered about. Matterson looks frightened now, like Peter has told him something horrible.
Outside. I haven't been outside in a long time.
Has it been more than 3 years, Mr. Matterson? I asked, and he gives me the first real acknowledgement that I'm there.
You have lots of projects here. To do this in 3 years, that would be quite impressive.
Yes, Matterson says nervously. I've worked in here for a long time, but only recently I haven't gone outside at all.
Recently, like 3 years ago. Peter says to no one in particular, as he continues to look through the unfinished projects.
I don't want to go. I'd really like for you to let me stay.
We can't do that, Mr. Matterson, replies Peter. I'm sorry, but we can't.
you'll have to come with us. I see now that Matterson had started sweating. I think he's nervous about the idea of leaving his apartment, this building.
I just can't,
he murmurs. And suddenly, in an instant, he runs. He moves past the door and down the hallway and towards the stairs. I look to Peter, who doesn't even flinch. No time. I turn down the hall and begin to run. I hear the echo of Peter's voice as I hit the stairwell.
You'll never catch him. The roof's on 20.
At the stairwell, I'm only a few feet behind Matterson, but he's running like it could somehow be for his life. He hits the 20th floor and opens the door to the roof. He runs across the flat top of the building, and I'm still too far behind. But at the edge, he stops. He turns to me, and I yell,
"What are you doing?"
He looks at me.
"I don't want to anymore. I don't want to talk about it,"
Matterson says, as he falls back from the ledge of the 20th floor. I look over the edge and see his body bends to the wind as he speeds up. In seconds, his body is smeared on the ground floor. I slowly walk back to the 17th floor where Peter still stands in Matterson's apartment.
"Why didn't you go after him?"
I said. "First day, but you'll see this happens a lot. Come on, we gotta scrape his body and bring him back." A woman walking towards Matterson's building eyes Peter and myself, picking up his guts, bits, and brains, and shoving them into Peter's car.
"They'll be cleared up soon,"
Peter says, answering a question interpreted from the woman's eyes. But the last bits in the trunk, I get in the car with Peter, and I see he's smiling.
"What are you happy about?"
"Not happy," he says. "I'm just thinking. Wow. He's gonna wake up in a lot of pain, you know?"
"Why didn't you chase him or help me?"
I asked, annoyed.
"We could have stopped him from jumping. He didn't need to do that."
"They always do that," he says, muted. "They always jump or cut or stab, and always to themselves. I don't know why, just something about being locked inside for that long. I mean, did you notice? Not a lick of food in the apartment. That guy has lost so much touch with reality, he probably hadn't eaten in 3 years. Too afraid to go outside. Sometimes a fall like that's a good reminder you're alive, and there ain't nothing you can do about it."
I just stare at Peter for a moment before I realize how much more about this he knows than me.
"So, what now? What happens? I've never seen anybody have to recover from having their body blown apart like that."
"He should look mostly like the Matterson we met in a few hours, as long as most of the body parts are together. They usually start forming back up pretty quick. Trick is, gotta make sure you get most of the body. Otherwise, it takes a lot longer."
I look back at the trunk and think about the Matterson's disparate bits combining and forming to make the man we saw.
"It'll hurt," Peter says. "It'll hurt a lot. I don't think there's a more painful recovery than coming back from having your body smashed on the road like that. But you know, this is probably good for him. He couldn't stay in that building forever. At some point, you gotta move on, do your service, do your school. I mean, there's a reason Council makes us volunteer. Otherwise, left to our own devices long enough of a period of time, think we might all end up like Matterson. Crazed, self-obsessed, trying to find meaning in the paintings and pictures and writing and video. We need simple, basic things in our life, like work."
I laugh a little, and Peter asks, "The old world used to have talks like that, I think. I mean, there's a lot of writing about it. The talk of what the purpose of life is and what happens if you have no purpose. I just never thought about it as a problem for us here in Welvin. We can all do what we want and have unlimited time to do it."
"Well, maybe that time and freedom is why people like Matterson go nuts," says Peter.
"Oh, come on.
You sound like Strom. Chancellor Strom has good points, and others agree too. It's because of him volunteering or schooling are mandatory. He gets it. Left to our own devices and with nothing to motivate, we all go crazy.
My own beliefs are that David Strom is a political disaster. I wave off Peter's points, and a few minutes later, we arrive at the station. I'm helping Peter with the mangled mess in the trunk when I spot the station chief.
Hey, you. Advisor, historian, whatever the hell you are. You get in here right now.
The chief yells. Go get it, Peter says, looking at the trunk. I think we should let him join up a little more before we can move him away. I go inside the station into the chief's office. Shocked, standing there with the chief, his chancellor, David Strom. He stands tall, long ago aging out his appearance of 30. His presence in a standard police station catches me. I've only ever seen him on video.
Bill, he says to me, acknowledging who I am.
Bill, I'm sorry to butt in like this, as you advise on the whole criminal situation this station has, but I'm here on part of your mentor, Zachary Shrine. I nod, confirming I know who he's talking about. Strom had been looking right at me since I entered the room, moving his eyes with precision to the station chief. If you would, Bill and I need the room to ourselves. Strom's gaze stays focused on the chief until the order is acknowledged, and he gives us an office that has been his for 400 years. The innate charisma and power of David Strom's commanding voice is more powerful in person than I've ever felt through video.
Bill, he says, I have some bad news. It's about your mentor, Zachary Shrine. But before I continue, I need to express that this is very sensitive information and that it is specifically for you alone. Do you agree?
Okay, I say, somewhat flummoxed and probably appearing shy. The shock of Strom's presence before me still hasn't settled.
Bill, your mentor, Zachary Shrine, is dead.
Strom says flatly. I don't understand. What do you mean, dead?
Yes, it is an odd term, but I don't think there's a better word for it. He has no heartbeat, no brain activity, and he's cold to the touch. By any reading of how dead was defined in the old world, he is dead. Now, I know that's a shock, so take a moment if you need. But please keep in mind that how you feel right now is why this needs to be kept quiet. No one dies here. No one has ever died here. News of a death must not spread, lest it cause panic.
Shocked is right. My thinking slows, my skin tingles, and I can hear my heartbeat.
A panic,
I muttered.
Right, a panic. How did this happen?
The council and myself believe this was done to him.
What are you saying? Someone has figured out how to kill?
Yes, that's right. That's a good word for it. Kill. We think there is someone out there that took to kill Zachary Shine.
But why are you telling me this?
Because the council and myself want your help.
How could I possibly...
He interrupts me. Because for 30 years, he's been your mentor, Bill. You know him best.
In Zachary Shine's more than 400 years, I know him best, I say, with some disbelief.
He has no wife, no kids, no friends. As a founder, he doesn't even have parents. He has been a teacher for more than 100 years, but no one has stayed with him for as long as you, and as recently as you. If anyone knows who would want to kill Zachary Shine, it's you, Bill. I still don't understand. What could you possibly want me to do? Strom purges his lips together and takes a few steps around the room. The chief here has told me that he had partnered you here with an older station volunteer, someone who has been on the job for more than 100 years. That's good. You can use him and his experience to help you find who did this to Zachary.
You want me to tell the man I just met, Peter, that someone has died? That someone here is actually no longer alive?
No, 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 Strom says, looking down. You cannot tell him that. The chief said you two are looking for some sort of criminal that attacks people or tortures them. Is that right?
I nod.
Good. Then tell this volunteer, Peter, that's who you're trying to track.
Chancellor, I appreciate you coming to tell me about Zachary, but even with Peter in my relationship with Shine, I don't know how I could help. I don't even know where to start.
I know it's a stressful moment, Bill, but you must think clearly. The Council could only fathom one possible explanation. Think, what's the only way someone could have done this?
In my mind's panic, I calm enough to think of the only way someone's mind and feeling could be altered. You mean a glitch? Someone's found a glitch that doesn't get you high or numb, but a glitch that can kill.
That's right. Most glitches just get you high, stoned. They alter your perception and your feelings, but who knows? Maybe someone has found a more nefarious glitch.
My ex-wife is a glitcher, I say. She used it all the time.
Yes, the Council and I know this, Bill. We also know that at one time she was a great mind. We think she could be of help to you.
I haven't seen her in a decade, I say. I don't even know where she is.
I understand, Bill. I know that this is difficult, but this is the most serious situation this city has ever faced.
There's a moment of silence as I contemplate Strom's request. The whole time, he just stares right at me with that commanding gaze.
Please, Bill, he says. Really, I know it's a lot at one time, but you really are in the best position to find out who did this. You know Zachary. You know an experienced glitcher. And today, you probably made friends with a veteran police station volunteer. Hell, today you're probably a member of the police yourself. In his commanding gaze, I nod and turn to exit the chief's office. As the door closes behind me, the realization of the enormity of what I just accepted washes over me.
Time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.